Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Girly Homesteader Podcast. On today's episode, I am interviewing Cody Hanner from Homestead Education. In this conversation today, we get into a lot of things, a little bit about her background and how she got into homesteading and how she's actually a commercial homesteader. So then we got into all of the different jobs and entrepreneurial roles that she has in her life. And we kind of get into just more of a conversation about becoming an entrepreneur and how to be brave also and trust your gut and your instincts, just to know that, yeah, you can do this if you want to. I do want to give just a heads up, though, that we were dealing with some internet issues when we were recording. So there are some points in the podcast where we're talking over each other a little bit. I did try to fix it if I could, but there's also some pauses in there, too. But still, I think the conversation was wonderful. So stay tuned for the conversation I had with Cody Hanner. Hello and welcome to season 3 of the Girly Homesteader Podcast, the show that's definitely not your typical homesteading podcast. I'm your host, Laura, a girly homesteader living in Xenia, Ohio with my husband, chickens, bees, and garden. On this weekly show, we'll cover the typical stuff like gardening and chicken lady life, but we also go beyond the farm and talk about things like goal setting, makeup, planners, skincare, and staying in tune with nature's seasons. I've considered myself a homesteader for the past 3 years now, and in 2024, I'm hoping to hone the skills I've learned and continue to share those experiences with you. So, welcome to this girlier side of homesteading, where we can grow and flourish together. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Grow and Flourish Planner, the garden and homestead planner I developed that goes beyond the farm because it helps you set goals and discover which facets of your homestead life need the most attention and which facets deserve celebrating. In this second edition of my planner, you get over 225 color-coded and seasonal pages of planning, documentation, and introspection. It starts out with a yearly overview, including the Grow and Flourish assessment, that helps you prioritize areas of your life, like relationships, homestead production, work, health, and more. The planner is then divided and color-coded into the four seasons, with each season having a check-in assessment, a space to consolidate notes from last year, map the garden, plan your plantings, track your seed starting, track soil health and amendments, write down seasonal meals, inventory your seeds, summarize the season, and more. Each season is then broken down into months with summary pages, daily rhythms, weekly planning, day-by-day tracking, harvest tracking, and egg production pages. Each section of the planner is tabbed to keep you organized, and it includes a rip-proof and waterproof cover to keep your dreams and records safe. The planner is also designed for the disc binding system, which allows the planner to grow with you, whether you want to see only one season at a time, all the seasons together, or even keep last year's notes right alongside so you can compare. This planner is $39, but as a listener of the podcast, you can get 15% off when you use the code PODCAST at checkout. Get yours now with the link in the show notes and be the most prepared you've ever been for next season. All right. Well, hi, everyone. Today on the podcast, I am interviewing Cody Hanner from Homestead Education. So, Cody, if people haven't heard of you, can you tell us about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, hi, everyone. I'm so happy to be here. I was excited when Laura and I were able to connect because I just felt like we jived. So I thought that would be a really fun conversation for us to have. And so I am a homesteader, a homeschool mom of six, a wife of a veteran. We live in North Idaho. We're on a 40-acre homestead. And I have a homeschool curriculum company and a podcast, as well as our farm, because that we have a commercial homestead. We sell about 350 hogs a year.
Oh, okay. So you're the first like commercial person that I've ever talk to then. Okay, so that takes it like completely whole different ball game. Oh, wow.
Well, and you know, I like to clarify, it's a commercial homestead. Like, we aren't doing confinement farming and all that type of stuff. Like, we are homesteaders, but people love our product, so we've been able to scale larger.
Wow. That, sorry, you cut out a little bit there, but that's
rural internet. Amazing. I think so, homesteaders get it.
I know. So that is actually like my husband and I, we are hoping to move to a more remote location maybe this year or the next year, but like, I don't know what we'll do about internet. I don't know. We'll figure it out when we get there.
We are like literally the last house on a rural highway before you get to Canada. So,
oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. So how cold is it there right now?
No. I mean, I don't know. It's probably 30 something degrees out. I mean, it's
okay.
It's wintertime temperatures.
Yeah. Okay.
It snowed yesterday, but it's all melted today. So.
Okay. So you have a lot of sun right now?
Yeah. We have a lot of sunshine. We're like in a valley. I don't know. We cut out a little bit, but might connect back up in a second. There we go. We're in a big open valley, so we get a lot of sunshine.
Okay. Oh, that sounds beautiful. I have never been to Idaho, so tell me, like, just what is it like there?
Oh, it's wonderful. We live in, like, a really, really rural county. It's one of the smallest counties in Idaho. There's, I think, like, 15,000 people in the whole county.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people, even they think of Idaho, and they think, like, the whole potatoes and... like the big open fields, and like we are up in the mountains, there's, you know, grizzlies and beautiful mountain lakes. And then we live in this valley that's all agriculture. And so like the world's largest hop farm is here at 72,000 acres.
Wow.
Yeah. And then like I overlook like a cattle farm and or a cattle ranch. I'm a Westerner. Why did I say farm?
Wow. Well, that sounds beautiful. So how did you get into homesteading? Or like, did you grow up this way? Because I know I didn't.
A little of each. I actually... Kind of,
I don't know. The concept of growing up around animals and everything like that, it just is so new to me. So I'd love to hear.
Yeah. I kind of a little of each. Like, I grew up... in rural Northern California, where my dad had a cattle ranch and we hunted, and that was just kind of life for us. But I went to college and majored in agriculture, and my whole thought was like, I want to work for the USDA. Like, wow, what a mindset change now, you know? And I ended up working in commercial ag as a food safety specialist for about 10 years. And then was like, this isn't for me. Like, I really hated that, the way food safety laws are set up, it creates a monopoly where small farms can't sell their products because it's so hard, like, to meet the laws, because the regulations do not match the laws at all. The laws are very ambiguous, and then the states are allowed to write them how they want to. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, no, this isn't for me. And so I started small farm consulting. And when my husband and I got married, about a year later, he got diagnosed with liver disease. And they told us he had maybe a year to live. And then, you know, typical VA insurance, they're like, or VA doctors, they're like, we heard if you eat healthier, but like, we don't know. And so I, like, you know, we're driving home that day and I'm like, I don't accept this answer. My husband's like, I'm so sorry you married somebody who's dying. And I'm like, no, we're not doing this. And so we got home and like, I called his dad and I'm like, we're really broke, but I need to like change everything we're doing. And his dad handed us a credit card and was like, you're his best shot. Heal my son, you know? And so we went from that point, always being like rural. We always had a garden. We had chickens. The kids raised 4-H pigs and we'd have an extra one every year or something, you know? But we went from that to literally attempting to grow all of our own food. And we ended up buying our much larger farm. And now we either grow or locally produce about 80% of our own food.
Wow.
Yeah. And
so
that was
how long?
That was 7 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And he has a fully healed liver.
Ah, that's fantastic. So.
And he's still grumpy.
What?
And he's still grumpy.
Okay. So diet is something that I know is very important to me, and that's part of my story. So I'm curious, what are the foods that made the biggest difference in his health?
You know, I was actually reading my first blog ever that I wrote recently, just like I was, you know, just changing some graphics on my website and stuff. And it was talking about how I'm suddenly trying to cook for my family of eight. And there's like these weird recipes that like, I'm like, okay, we're going to try it. And my whole family looks at it like, I'm not going to eat this. And so my whole focus was cooking foods that my family was comfortable with, but doing it in the healthiest way possible.
Okay.
So like I said, we raise our own pigs. We have chickens, we raise beef, we have a milk cow, and we eat very similarly to how we did before. I just do it all from scratch.
Okay.
And I've put a lot of systems into place where I don't live in the kitchen either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, for example, one of them is we make all of our own seasoning blends. And at first it was like this big deal where I had to order all these like bulk seasonings and we're all in the kitchen trying to figure it out. And now like all the seasonings are in the cabinet. I have a little like, it's actually a gum container, like a plastic gum container that I taped on the inside of the cabinet door. And mm-hmm. on index cards, it has all of our seasoning blends.
Oh, wow.
And whoever's cooking dinner that night, if we're out of taco seasoning, make some taco seasoning. And they'll make big, you know, they'll fill the big container and we use it until we run out. And it's just kind of part of the evening.
Huh.
See, and, you know, I have teenagers. So, yeah, like it's whoever's cooking like dinner. It's not just me in there all the time.
The
like
thing that probably makes or breaks people. Yeah. And like, I feel like if people don't figure out the systems that work best for them, then like it's could be the thing that makes you give up, you know?
Right. And don't do it, like try to figure out how to do it all at once because you will give up.
Oh yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like it took me probably 2 years to figure out that pine shavings in my chicken coop was not for me. I just don't like it.
Right.
And I figured out a system that works better. And like, it takes time, but it's worth it to try and experiment with all of those things.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And you know, sometimes you're going to make mistakes and that's okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, that's the point of the way we live, you know, it's learning new skills, experimenting, and just, well,
that's
learning. I mean, I think as homesteaders, we're probably like, all a little bit of the same type of crazy because we just want to learn all of the stuff.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to tell my dirty little secret. When I go to the grocery store and Kraft mac and cheese is 60 cents a box, I have six kids that I homeschool and they eat like 10 meals a day.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. There isn't at all. I mean, we, you know, just this past weekend, we were making maple syrup. And so, or no, well, yeah, we were making maple syrup. My husband, he went out and bought hot dogs and marshmallows. And that's what we roasted over the fire, you know, right. Whatever. It's okay.
You know, it's like, I'm like, I used to always say just everything in moderation. And then now like I start going down these deep rabbit holes and I'm like, oh my gosh, everything's poison. And I'm like, well, I can't change everything overnight.
No. Mm-mm. And we are already, most of us listening to this podcast, we're already way ahead of the rest of the population because at least we know and are aware of these things and we're trying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all doing way better than we could be.
Right. And I love the movement. Like, I love everywhere I turn that somebody's trying to opt out of some system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in your community, it's obviously much smaller than mine. How, like, I guess I don't really know how to phrase this, but like opting out, do you feel that in your community, everybody kind of feels that same way? Or do you feel like you are alone in that?
In my community, yes. Like everybody feels that way. And it's really great because I have this wonderful community of people that are so like-minded.
Okay.
But growing up in Northern California, which Northern California is pretty normal. I'm going to like put that out there. Like it's pretty rural. We call it normal California. But my family, my support system doesn't understand me.
Okay.
Which is funny because growing up on a ranch and growing up farming, and then I have like my mom who literally ran a taxidermy shop out of our house being like, "Ooh, you have farm animals in your house?" And I'm like, "You had dead animals."
Huh.
But I think that like a homestead mentality is different.
Sorry,
Like you just let anybody live inside. Like we had a piglet inside last night because it was too cold and we had to give it a bath. So it came inside for a while.
I saw that.
Like I'm sitting there working and like the kids are all playing with a piglet on the floor, you know?
And that's okay. It's okay. All right. So in your community, you feel normal, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But then with your family, sometimes you feel a little bit out of place.
Yeah. And it's a bummer. Like it's made it where I'm not as close to like my family members or friends that I've had since like childhood. So even though I feel really connected in my community, I don't have those like lifelong connections that I'd always had.
Mm-hmm. And so does your family, do they all have different lifestyles then, I guess? Like they're not doing homesteading. So are they just doing like the typical, you know, typical.
Honestly, when I look at it, I don't. Yeah, they definitely are the 9-to-5ers. They do not understand my entrepreneurial lifestyle. My dad was a serial entrepreneur, and I take after him very much in that sense. And my dad was the more homestead type. Like he had the ranch. He grew up in rural Tennessee. Just a different mindset on life, and that's where I sit. But like, my mom is a 9-to-5er for sure.
Okay.
And she doesn't get how I work. Like I work, you know, she's a 9-to-5er. I work 20 hours a day and I'm okay with it. I love it. Like my business coach recently actually said, some people have hobbies and some people have businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I resonate with that.
Yeah. So do they kind of struggle to, I guess, understand how you keep yourself busy, or is it the opposite that they're thinking you do too much?
They think I'm too busy to do things that they see important. And I think that they're frivolous things.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Like I've had like my mom say like, well, when you were a kid, like you and when you were a teenager, you and your friends just ran around all the time and like goofed off and went to the movies. And like your kids only get to go to the movies like twice a year. Yeah, because there's not a movie theater in our county, you know. But my teenagers, I mean, they're out, we're taking them out hunting and huckleberry picking and they're running the farm and they have their friends and they're happy and enjoy their life.
Yeah.
And I was always miserable as a teenager, so.
Yeah, I think, my high school experience, it was definitely not my favorite, so. I don't want to keep living that way.
Right. And I mean, the best memories I had as a teenager were like when me and my friends would all load up in a pickup truck and take guns up on the mountain and go like target shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have an 18-year-old son and that's what he does with his buddies. They like all load up and go up in the mountains and that's what they do for fun.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so you at least do have some of your people close by. That's good.
Yeah.
Now, the other people in your community,
we have our family here in town. We have six kids and two of them have already moved out.
Small family businesses? Oh, sorry. There was a lag there. What were you saying?
I was just saying, we have six kids. Two of them have already moved out. And that's our family here in town. Like we don't have really anyone else locally. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then in terms of your community, are they a lot of entrepreneurs too, you think? Like, are they small businesses?
Bummer. I missed your whole question.
That's okay. So in your community, do you think that the families there, they're more so entrepreneurial, like they are small businesses themselves?
Absolutely. Like most of my friends here locally have small businesses. We joke that to live as far out as we do, we need six streams of income. And so it's like a constant thing about like, what are your six streams of income?
Okay.
So, and then like I'm in a lot of like women's entrepreneurial groups here in my like locally. Like you would think such a small area doesn't have much, but like probably half of my female friends in town here have podcasts and stuff.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So see, that goes back to exactly like what I was saying. All of us, we're all the same little bit of crazy where we just want to, learn all of the skills and also make money from some of them.
Yeah, I
So
mean, I
you are
work.
an entrepreneur.
Yep. I worked in, commercial corporate life for a long time, but I've been able to turn that into those six streams of income on my homestead and stuff. So,
So then, what are your six streams? Or do you have more than six?
well, like I have my pigs, and which I actually have six streams of income just from my pigs. So like I sell feeder piglets, I sell
Oh my
4-H
gosh.
pigs, I sell retail cuts, whole hogs. I sell breeder pigs and I sell like sausage sows. And that's a
Wow.
regular year-round income for me with those pigs.
Wow.
Whereas then we also have other products on our farm and they're all seasonal. And then I have my online businesses. So that goes into like my books, my digital products, my podcast, affiliate marketing, and then like marketing for other companies and stuff.
Okay. So you have help, I'm assuming, with all of this stuff, or no?
Have my family. I have hired people in the past and I just haven't been happy with the level and quality of work.
Okay.
So I'm actually spending this year, spending the money that I spent on like a marketing team last year and focusing on me learning marketing to the level that I want it to be. And I also have a really outside of the box business, so it doesn't like fit into any marketing scheme. So I'm learning it myself and then I'll hire VAs to do, which are virtual assistants. I'll hire them to do the, I don't know, like when I write a blog, I have to have a graphic for that blog in like seven different forms. It's ridiculous. Like you have to have one for Instagram and one for Facebook and one for Pinterest. And that just kills my time. That's one where like I'll write a blog and then send it off to a VA and have them do the rest.
So that's something that I've, sorry, there's a lag again.
Yeah. Good thing we can edit these,
That's
right?
something that I've never gotten into. What was that?
I said, good thing we can edit these, right?
I
Yeah.
know. So VAs, I have never experimented with that, but I see the appeal of it. It's just that I don't think that I'm like worthy of using him yet. I don't know. Do you deal with that kind of coaching, or do you work and do that kind of coaching for entrepreneurs?
I don't. I mainly only do coaching for homestead businesses.
Okay.
But I could definitely, we could totally have a conversation. So I
So
actually
then,
have my own business coaches for that type of stuff.
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So if somebody was wanting to make money from their homestead and like more so off the products that they create and not necessarily like knowledge-based products, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a huge question, but like where should somebody start? I don't
Right.
know. That's a
Well,
hard question.
it really is. But, I work with people a lot on this. And what I kind of try to focus on is what can you feasibly do and what brings you joy? Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I'll start selling my chicken eggs to, offset the cost of feed.
Yeah.
Well, you're never going to get rich off of chickens, but there's kind of a bell curve with that one though. Like, and what I say is like, you can, the more chickens you have, like you go up that bell curve and eventually you get to a place where you're making an income. Uh-huh. But then you start getting to the point where you have to have so much extra infrastructure and so many like state regulations and stuff that your bell curve starts going back down.
Okay.
So, I mean, there is that. Like, if you, but so if you love chickens and you're like, I could like, I would love to just walk out in my yard and have 100 laying hens and that would make me happy. Mm-hmm. You could make money off those eggs.
Okay.
Like, you absolutely could. But, you know, if you're like, I want to be a cattle rancher, don't expect to make money your first year. Like, it's just not going to happen because, like, if depending on if you start with calves or with cows, you're not going to see your first income for like 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's important to remember that like everything is marketable. So,
okay.
When you're selling something, a lot of people are just thinking about the end product. So like I always use vegetables, like vegetable starts or like seedlings as my example on that one. Everyone's like, okay, I'm going to sell seedlings or I'm going to sell vegetables or something. And they're only thinking about that end product. But what about like selling small seedlings in the 4-packs or selling, you know, mature herb plants? Or once you do have your vegetables, you can sell your vegetables, but the extra, people are like, oh, I have all this extra. Like I couldn't sell it. I didn't make any money off of it. You could easily sell extra as like chicken feed and pig feed and stuff. You're not going to get a quality, like a premium price for it, but you're not going to totally lose all your money. Then another option with that is the value added products. Like nobody's going to buy zucchini in August. People are sneaking zucchinis in each other's cars, you know? And so you shred all your zucchini and freeze it and you make a ton of like mini loaves of zucchini bread and you turn around and sell those for $5 to $8 a piece the whole next year because they're frozen and you just pull them out and bake them. Mm-hmm. And you have that year round income. So, I mean, it's from like one pack of zucchini seeds, you could do, you know, 20 different things with them.
Right. So what is your advice when like for how, I guess my real question, how important is social media? Do you think like as a business coach, how important is it?
I have a love hate relationship with social media as I think a lot of people do.
Everybody. Yeah.
And I think, you know, like somebody was telling me recently, I was like, I feel like all I ever do on social media is sale, sale, sale. And I hate that. Like, and they're like, people expect to be sold to on social media at this point. And chances are if you post 7 days a week and 3 of those days are selling something, chances are mm-hmm. like you have enough followers. No one's going to notice if they see it twice. Like, or if they see a sales post twice, you know? But with that, as far as the importance of selling, if you have a product that is either like, you know, the knowledge-based products, like selling eBooks or books or a podcast or anything that you can ship that can be shipped like nationwide, social media is really important. That is like the place to advertise at this point. If you're selling a more farm-based product, like I'm not marketing my whole hogs all over the country. I'm marketing them only in North Idaho.
Right.
So with that, yeah, I use social media, but you know, I'm using like my local farm page sites and, you know, maybe I'm posting it on my own page. Just, hey, we do have pigs available. But a lot of that's like word of mouth or Craigslist or putting up a flyer at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And it just really depends. Like I use social media because it is a powerful tool. But I definitely don't live on my social media page for my farm business. And usually my wait list is, I can't fill it. Like we're looking at piglets right now and we can't fill all of our wait lists.
Wow. So I have another question.
Yeah. I love it. Like, I can answer questions all day long, but you asked me to like, just like go for it. And
Well, because I mean, I'm an entrepreneur at heart too. So what systems do you use to keep your head, your desk, your anything organized? Like what? Because I mean, I am an inherently messy person. I am.
Okay, well, you know, your viewers can't see this, but I'm going to turn my computer just a little bit and you're going to see my shipping department. Right, yeah. It's a disaster. My office is a little bit of each, but as far as those systems, you know, it's kind of split. Like sometimes for our farm, our system is literally a notepad. You know, today we were trying to find out, we're like, when were those pigs born? Like, I don't even know. So like all of us are getting out our cell phones and looking for pictures of when the pigs were born so that we could even like let our customers know, because it's 4-H pigs, so they have to keep records. But with that, my husband and I share a email address and a Google Drive so that him and I can both field farm questions, and that we both have access to like our inventory of pigs. Or if somebody, you know, I might run to the grocery store and someone's like, hey, I want to get a pig off you. How much? I'm like, 800. And they'll pull out 800 cash right there in the grocery store. I can go into my Google Drive and mark that, especially if we're down to just a couple of pigs, you know?
Right.
Of course, I'd probably text my husband too, but whether or not he'd get the text or remember, that's a whole nother conversation, you know? So yeah, that makes it really easy where we can share information back and forth. For my digital style businesses, I've tried a few different things to keep my brain straight. So far, Asana has been my favorite.
Okay.
And it's an online planner mm-hmm. type thing. And you can plan things by projects or by calendar. And then I still have like a paper planner. Like I'm a paper planner person. But like all week long, I can be plugging things into my Asana right from my phone. And then I can sit down once a week and write down my week like in my calendar and see it visually that way that I need to see it.
Okay.
And I just, you know, every Sunday evening or Monday morning, I sit down and do that. And that just, it helps me like manage my whole life, because my Asana calendar isn't, I could put like, you know, the kids' homeschool stuff in there, and I could put, you know, homeschool co-op stuff in there, and I could put farm stuff in there, and I do, but it gets a little messy that way, and not everybody can see what's going on, where I can write everything out in my calendar and then put it in my shared calendar with my family. And so my kids usually even know when I have a podcast and that type of stuff, and they know when all the doctor's appointments are going to be, and I can schedule all that stuff where everyone can see it, like in our either Google or Apple calendars.
Okay.
And then, like I said, Asana has been really helpful in that way. Like I can do my whole social media calendar and assign it to myself. Or if I have a VA working for me, or my daughter sometimes does project, even my husband and son do projects sometimes, I can assign them right in Asana, and it sends them a notice to their phone and they can click on it. And I can have a link to a Google Doc in there, a link to the Google Drive, a link to a Canva doc. I use Loom, which is kind of like YouTube, but okay. You can video your screen while you're working. So like if I want to show somebody how to do something back end on my website, I can video my screen while I'm talking on Loom. It saves it. And then I can put that link right into Asana and send it to them. And then like, you know, my son does a lot of putting my affiliate stuff into my website. And so I can literally be like, hey, I want to add these affiliate links to this entire list on my website. Here's how to do one with Loom. Send him that link and he can sit there and do the rest.
Okay.
So that's really handy.
Okay. So yeah, a mix of digital and paper. I'm kind of the same mm-hmm. way too. Because like for me to keep my life together and organized, and also with my husband, I need something digital. So I'm a Google person. I'm a Google user as well.
And then, but, I mean, I have my notepads and
yeah,
you know, I'm a homesteader. So like I do podcasts and I have lip gloss sitting next to my desk, and I also have a rusty knife. So
yeah, all of the random things that,
right.
So, okay. I'm just kind of picking your brain for my own personal use, really. So my dream someday, I am very, very far off from this dream, but my dream someday for my homestead business is to be known as like the salad lady around here.
Ooh.
And be able to have salad greens. Well, all year round would be ideal, but I can't even do that for myself right now. So that's why it's very far off. But in your area, like, are there people doing that? I don't know. Can you grow greens during the winter time up there?
Not outside, but I could grow them in my grow room.
Okay.
And my grow room is honestly my mud room with a oil heater and a heat lamp. So
yeah. Well, hey, it's warmer than it is outside.
You know, there's people up here, like, I know a gal who has a sprout business and she sells sprouts both to restaurants and as animal feed. And she has like a big like semi-trailer on her property and she grows all of them in her semi-trailer and she does like the fodder and the greens and then they deliver them all over North Idaho.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Or then like we live really near Sandpoint and Coeur d'Alene and Spokane. So all three of those, like Sandpoint's a big, there's a huge lake here and a ski resort. So there's definitely a market for those types of things, no matter where you go. You just have to kind of think outside the box, you know, or even a lot of people up here go, oh, we're so rural. Nobody would want specialty stuff. Well, the thing is, we can't get specialty stuff up here. So if there's somebody who's willing to put in that work, they definitely have a market.
Right.
Like I said, I'm always about being creative.
Yes. Yeah, creativity, that's just, I think, an inherent thing, an inherent, like, trait that most homesteaders have to have.
Mm-hmm. And no matter what product you have, there's going to be education involved with it. Like, your customers have to be, I don't want to say they have to be taught, because that sounds really condescending, but there's an education level involved with it. So like if you came to me as a homestead business client and you were saying like, I want to do this salad green business. Like if I were you on your social media locally, like every day I'd be posting recipes with the salad greens and the nutritional facts of salad greens grown at home versus at the store. Or I'd be selling packs on how to start your own microgreens. And sell the packs and stuff, you know? So like I would be doing a little bit of everything and that education piece too, because they used to say that in marketing, people had to be exposed to something 3 to 5 times before they'd buy it. And now it was 11. And I think last I heard it's like 20 something.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because people are being sold to all the time and it's in fast bits. And so for something to click or to absorb or to have time to think about it and stuff, they're saying as many as like 20 times.
Wow.
And you know, there's the people that see something once and they're like, ding, I'm sold, you know, but that's not going to be every customer.
Right. So finding like a niche market, how important do you think that is then?
I think if you're trying to make it in a regular income and not a residual income, that yes, finding a niche market and then, or, oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Do you think somebody should have a niche market over something more common? Is that what you're asking? Or are you talking about how to market a niche?
Yeah. Should somebody have a more specific customer in mind? Like how important is that? Cause I mean, yeah, everybody eats salad greens, but like,
You know, you're definitely know. With something like that, you know, the more you can have,
like, is there a regular niche salad customer? Eater? I have no idea.
Right. The more you can have a regular customer, like a restaurant that buys it every week or, you know, a family that's like, oh, we love our greens and we want them every week. So yes, please deliver every week or I'll pick them up every week. That's going to be a regular income for you. And that's going to be your cash flow that you need to be selling to other customers. So when you have a niche market, definitely having something that's going to keep that regular flow for you. And then the more niche you are, the more education people need with it.
Okay.
You know, like, for example, my homeschool curriculum. It's a homestead homeschool curriculum. I'm like, what is homestead science? Nobody knows what homestead science is because it's not a thing. Like, I'm the only one who does it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I go to conferences and stuff or even online, I'm constantly having to be like, well, this is an agriculture curriculum based on small scale farming. So people really, like, I have to do that education piece to explain what it is and why they need it. Like, once they realize it's a science curriculum, they're like, oh yeah, it's like a math curriculum. Like, everybody needs a math curriculum, you know, everybody needs a science curriculum. They just don't realize that what I have fits that niche of what they're needing or didn't even know they needed or wanted. Whereas my pigs, everybody eats pork. Well, not everybody, but most people eat pork. So there's two kind of pieces to that. One of them is, in a rural area like this, I sell piglets like crazy. Like, piglets, even whole hogs, because people are like, well, I don't want to have to raise a pig, but I want a whole hog for my freezer. Like, I sell those like crazy. Mm-hmm. But my retail cuts, sometimes people are like, why am I going to pay $8 a pound when I can pay $5 at the grocery store?
Right.
And that's where that education piece comes in. So do you catch the parts about the education?
Yeah, I did.
A lot of times with this app, it's recording both sides of it.
Oh, okay.
So we should be good.
Okay.
I don't, like I said, I don't use it personally, but I've recorded with other people who we've had this issue, so.
Okay. yeah, I've never had to use like the two separate ones, but we'll see what happens. But yes, I did get the part of the education because, like, yeah, not everybody's going to want to pay, you know, X amount for pastured pork. But yes, mm-hmm. as you said, you have to educate them and say, well, this is why.
Yeah, they're like, my feed isn't subsidized and I'm not doing it in a confinement operation and you're getting an organic product and, you know, that type of thing. That then they're like, oh, yeah, then I definitely want to do it that way.
Right. So do you think that any of your kids have the entrepreneurial gene?
Yeah, I think they do. Actually, like, my 18-year-old's actually my stepson, but I've been raising him for 10 years now. And he called us the other day and he's like, I am so sick of working for someone. We're like, welcome
at to 18 life, you know? Already. Wow.
Yeah. Well, he got his first job at 15 and he's been working as an electrician's apprentice for 3 years. The joy of homeschooling. And so he was like, I'm going to start saving my money. I want to get a nice work truck. If I get a work truck, will you guys help me buy a good pressure washer? I want to open a pressure washing business.
Okay.
And we're like, you get the truck, we'll buy the pressure washer. Like, seems fair. Our other son, he wants to go into agriculture 100%. Now, whether or not he'll do that entrepreneurially or working for someone, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, we'll just have to see where that goes, but that's what he loves. He has his dairy cows. He researches agriculture. He reads advanced agriculture books like I'm reading all the time, you know. Like, we share a reading list. Wow. My daughter, she's really good at, like, almost everything she does when it comes to business stuff, but I don't know what she's going to do yet. She always says she wants to be a vet. And, like, she focuses on it and she studies it. But then, I don't know, she'll, like, last month she decided she was going to cook all of our meals without the grocery store. Like, she wanted to see if we had enough food in the house to get us through a whole month without the grocery store. Wow. And it actually, I told her, like, it's not possible because I wasn't planning for this, you know. But she was able to do it on, like, a $200 budget. Like, she just bought, like, cheese and a couple other things.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, and it was good food, like lasagna and soups and homemade breads. And she, like, was making homemade granola, and I made a whole bunch of, like, homemade yogurt with our cow's milk. And so, I mean, we were eating good.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's an achievement because you have, what, 6 people in your house now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That is a big achievement.
And with homeschoolers, like I said, they have, like, second breakfast and third lunch and...
You know. So there's a question there. For someone who is trying to do all the things, like they're working, they have a family, maybe they're homeschooling too. Like how did you make time to pursue your entrepreneurial, your business dreams? Because like you do a lot, you have a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, I have a supportive family. I don't do it all by myself, but they're mm-hmm. definitely not writing textbooks or doing podcasts. They do more of the farm stuff and, you know, they do shipping for me for my books and that type of thing. But when I began pursuing it, it was a lot of working after the kids went to bed at night. And then one thing I did is like the baby was getting really, really tough. Like he'd wake up at like 5 a.m. and stuff. And I was working until 1 o'clock and I was just exhausted. And we're like, maybe we should look at getting some help so that I can take like a nap in the afternoon and stuff. And then we're like, well, why don't we just pay our daughter an allowance? And so that started. She's the only one who gets an allowance because she gets up with the baby in the morning, which, you know, if he wakes up before 7, I just keep him entertained, you know. Mm-hmm. But she gets up at 7 with the baby and makes some breakfast and stuff. And then if I need to sleep in another hour or if I just want to get a shower by myself or something like that, then she handles that. And then if I need an afternoon nap to kind of compensate for working all night, you know, then a lot of times the baby goes down with me anyways, but if he doesn't, then she takes up that, she handles that time and then she gets an allowance for it. So that was really helpful. Another thing, I do a lot of batch work. Okay. So, you know, like all a Saturday, like all the kids are outside playing or something, I'll just go out with my laptop and sit on the porch and work and, you know, do all my social media posts for the month or all my blog posts for the month. And another thing is like sitting in the living room in the evenings, you have your teenagers watching TV, you have your husband on his cell phone. So you like feel like you should like what, be on your cell phone or watching TV or something too. That's what I want to be doing.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe I can't like, you know, write a textbook when I have a baby jumping up and down in my lap, but I can definitely do accounting or back-end work and that type of stuff easily. If everyone else is watching TV, why don't I just do what makes me happy?
Mm-hmm. So and yeah, that must be a critical part of it then to like truly, truly enjoy and want to do your business dream because yeah, you're going to be doing it at weird hours of the day.
Yeah. When you'd normally we looked at it one time and I spend less time on like my phone and computer sometimes than like my family does on their phones.
Okay.
You know, there's times like I'll be on my computer all day long and I'm like, yeah, I only did an hour on my phone. And everyone's like, that's not fair. You had your computer out. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
But I'm not looking at like reels on my computer, you know, so.
Yeah.
It just really depends on what you want to do and what is passion for you.
Right.
You know, I'm doing research for a book right now and I'm reading some really intense historical and scientific books right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard to do when I have kids all over the place and stuff. So if I can catch them on an audiobook, I'll take them out to the plant, you know, my plant starting and like start seeds all day long. I'm helping out the homestead and I'm listening to my book and I'll just keep a notepad or my phone handy to be able to take any notes that I need. In the spring and fall, I'm working out in my garden with my headphones in. In fact, my daughter has picked up on it. She loves it too. She'll put an audiobook on and she'll come out and help me weed the garden for hours. And like we have the garden fenced, but then I have a sandbox right by the garden and a swing set. So my 3 and 5 year or 3 and 6 year old,
oh,
they're just playing, doing That's their thing. I only put one headphone in so I can hear if someone dies on the other side, you know? And I just do my thing and they holler if they need me, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, passion is important. And then also just making the most use of your time too. Because like right there, you know, you were just describing, mm-hmm. you were doing three things at once. You were learning. you were working in the garden and you were watching after your kids to make sure they don't die. So that's three things. That's great.
Yeah. It makes a difference. And, you know, also the kind of key thing with our life is we enjoy what we're doing. So even though it's work, like we're working on our homesteads, we're working when we're writing our online things. Heck, I'm even working when I take the kids out huckleberry picking or something, because I'm taking pictures and I'm learning and I'm things to like write about and put on my social media. But it's not work when you love it.
That's true. That is very, very true. Well, so then what is one, like, give me your best advice then for a woman specifically, because this is the Girly Homesteader podcast, right? But like a woman specifically who maybe she, you know, she has her homestead, she wants to do, I guess, something more with it. What is the biggest piece of advice to like become brave enough to do it?
So I missed that last little piece, and I feel like that's an important question.
It was, what advice would you give like a female woman homesteader who she has her homestead, but she wants to do something more with it? What would you tell her to help her feel more brave to start?
Oh, the brave part. I'm a mess in my head 90% of the time. So, but I would say like, this is what we were meant to do. If you look at it historically, if you look at it biblically, however you want to see it, the women were the ones who ran the homestead and they were the ones that were making money off of the value-added products always for as far back as you can see. It's in our blood. It's in our genetics. It's in our sociology. So don't feel like when you have those moments where you're like, do I just want to be somebody else who's selling eggs like on social media? And I'm kind of embarrassed. I don't know if I want to do it. Like, this is your calling. And another piece of that is you can't have like a local food system if nobody has local food to buy.
That's true.
So.
Well, I love that. Yeah. I mean, it is. It is an innate in us, just as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's beautiful. Well, thank you, Cody.
You're welcome.
Where can people find you?
I'm at thehomesteadeducation.com. You have to get that the in there because, you okay. know. and that's the same on Facebook, on social, or on Instagram. I'm homestead_education.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make sure that I put all of the links to those in the show notes too.
Awesome. Thank you.
Even easier. Well, thank you very much, Cody.
You're welcome. Yeah, I really had a good time coming on.
Awesome. So did I. And maybe we'll talk again.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Grubly Farms, the brand of chicken food and treats I use for my own flock. What's always been important to me is making sure my girls get a non-soy protein source, but Grubly Farms takes it one step further by using food waste to raise the black soldier fly larvae that they then turn into insect-based protein. This is way more natural for chickens than the fish-based food I used to use. Grubly Farms is also higher in calcium than other feeds because it is made of insects, and I've definitely noticed stronger eggshells because of it. My girls go crazy for the crumbled food, but you can shop all their products with a link in the show notes, and you can get 25% off your first order by using the code GIRLYHOMESTEADER at checkout. Thanks for listening to the Girly Homesteader podcast. If you liked this episode, please make sure to leave a rating and subscribe so you never miss a new episode. I'll talk to you next week, but until then, I hope you grow and flourish in all the ways that make you, you.